Welcome back everyone to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, subscribe and smash that thumbs up. A shout out to my channel members and my patrons. Download your favorite scary story and listen to me on the go wherever you may lie. On my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. Now, let's get spooky. An elevator stands alone in the depths of the woods. The sound of its low, electric hum grows steadily louder. It's subtle at first, but it rises to join the soft crunches of the sticks and ferns beneath our feet. The tiny fine hairs on the back of my neck raise up in response. There are no birds now, no insects, just the crunch and that soft, steady hum. The elevator stands as a steel obelisk in the center of a small clearing. Pine needles litter the ground. They are illuminated and faint blue and neon green from the elevator's two small lights in the darkness. There are no buildings anywhere near here. Nothing urban or man-made. Just endless dark forest. Leaves, pine, and this elevator. The doors are closed, and there's a single, shiny silver button embedded into the frame. I come to a stop anxious, but try not to show it. James and Maya stop too, though James steps the closest. Ever the bravest, ever the dumbest. He takes another step, then another, and places his hand on the elevator door. He turns around to grin at us, the side of his face illuminated in the green glow. "It's warm," he says quietly, his grin widening. "Are you guys ready?" Are we ready? What seemed like a great idea in the middle of the afternoon now seems foolish and dangerous. Hell, scary too, I'll admit it. I glanced over to Maya. I'm not going to be the one to suggest that we chicken out, but if she brings it up, well, then I'll back her. I silently hope that she says something, but she does not. She only shifts silently from foot to foot. And James takes our silence as a response. He turns back to the elevator and presses the button. For a moment, nothing happens. I realize that I am holding my breath and we wait and we listen. A soft whirling joins the rumble beneath the ground. An LED X appears above the elevator doors on a dusty screen. Then, it quickly changes into a -4, then -3, -2, -1, and 0. With a soft ding, the elevator door slides open, revealing a pretty standard inner compartment inside. We look back into our own faces in the mirror that covers the elevator's back wall. Behind us is the illusion of the eternal forest. James claps his hand and breaks the tension. "Okay, ladies, here we go. We going down?" "James," Maya murmurs. "I don't know about this. This thing could go anywhere." He signs. "Don't go back on me now, girl. It's okay. We'll all be together. We'll just go down and check it out. Take some pictures, maybe a video for YouTube." Maya says nothing, and James turns to me. "Indy, come on. Set her straight." "I'm down, James, obviously. But we should for sure all stick together. I'm not leaving Maya behind if she wants to stay." James rolled his eyes. "Mm-hmm." He presses the elevator door again to prevent the elevator doors from closing. Waiting for us to make a move, and seeing that none of us were, he takes it upon himself to stride right into the elevator's compartment, then turns to face us, folding his arms. "Let's go already," he says to us. I take a step towards him and my foot crunches in the leaves. "James, just wait a second." But he only grins. The doors slide shut, and he vanishes from sight. I jump forwards and repeatedly press the elevator button to try to reopen the doors, but I'm too late. "For fudge's sake, man," I mutter angrily, looking up to the LED display above the doors. They flicker and change from 0 to -1, slowly through -2, where the display then blinks and cuts out. "Indy, what do we do?" Maya asks me, as I reach into my pocket for my phone. Straight away, I try to dial James' number, but he declines it. "Ugh, that guy," I fume quietly in the glow of the elevator thinking. "All right. Well, he obviously wants us to follow him down. Let's just wait for him to come back up. He'll probably get bored without the attention." "Sure," Maya says. "Yeah, good idea." So that's what we do. Not particularly exciting, but we just wait there in the darkness, checking our phones, trying to send through Texas. But 5 minutes pass, then 10, and then 20, and then 30. Maya stirs. "This isn't working, is it? He's not coming back up. Hell, what if he's in trouble?" I bit my lip. She's giving voice to my own thoughts. "We're gonna have to go down, aren't we?" "Yeah," she replied. "Damn." I pocket my phone and brush my hair back from my face. "All right. Let's get down there and get it over with. And be prepared for him to do something stupid like jump out at us." I reach forward and press my finger against the button. Now that I actually have time to think, I realize that James was right. It does feel kinda warm. The whirling beneath the ground resumes, and I feel a subtle buzzing and a murmuring through my body as I wait for the doors to open. The LED at the bottom of the elevator reappears. It changes through the numbers till it reaches 0. And with the same soft ding, the elevator doors slide steadily open, and we once again look back into our own faces in the mirror's reflection, with the endless shadows of the forest leading away behind. "Here we go, then," I mutter, in a voice that fails to project. I step forward first and Maya follows, and together we head inside the compartment. "Which floor did James go down to?" There's a pause. "I don't know. It was the first one. Was it -2 or lower?" "Damn it, I don't remember either." "Well, let's try -2 first, then." My heart began to pound, but I do my best to ignore its beating as I reach for the buttons at the wall to my left. I tap the -2, and the doors draw slowly shut with a soft hiss. For a moment, there is nothing. I can feel Maya's nervous energy right beside me, and then we both jump as the elevator jolts and begins to descend. The whirring sound coming from all around us now. Down we go. Down to -1. It's clear that the elevator has significantly picked up speed, but we're not dropping through levels as quickly as I thought we would. How deep down are we going exactly? I look around me. There's not much going on in this compartment. There's a mirror, the shiny chrome walls and doors and buttons, and little compartment besides them. I peer closer to read the small text written on the grid's label. "Do not open, /engage prior to adequate shutdown. Risk of fire. Maximum weight 2,000 pounds. The elevator drops down to -2. It whirls and grinds as it draws to a halt, and I hold my breath as I wait for the doors to open. There's the hiss, and the world beyond the doors reveals itself. It takes my eyes a moment to adjust. The hall before us is vast and long, wide with high-up, heavy, pipe-lined ceilings, and clinical, if rather dank-stained walls that lead away from the shadow and beneath the dim glow of gently humming fluorescent lights. They look old, and some are cracked and flickering. Some of the beams don't seem to work at all. "Whoa," Maya murmurs. "This is spooky as hell." James? I hiss, leaning out from the elevator doors and into the darkness. Are you there? But there is no reply. I sign and bring my hands up to my chin. Then I sit out into the hall, looking back at Maya. Come on, let's go and find him. She says nothing, but pales as she steps out from the elevators to join me. Once she's done this, the doors whirry quietly closed. I shiver, but set off into the hall. Tensed and waiting for James to jump out at us at any moment. I hope he will, to tell the truth. Then we could laugh and put this behind us and just get the hell out. But James does not appear. What the hell is this place, Indy? Maya asks. Some kind of bunker, you think? I don't know, I reply as I cast my eye down long, offshooting corridors. Corridors leading away into the shadows, and marked with long strips of crisscross tape. Condemned, they read. Do not enter, etc. There are plenty of old wooden boxes stacked up against the walls, and areas of the surrounding space look to have been sealed away with metal shutters, seemingly locked up tight. James! I call out again, a little louder, trying to keep the fear from shaking my voice. His name echoes down and away into the gloom, and as I'm looking around, I catch sight of something moving, something up high against the ceiling. I recoil in sudden horror, my breath caught in my throat for a second as I stagger away from the movement, and Maya jumps in turn at my sudden motion. Something seems to be shivering up by the ceiling, roughly the size of, I don't know, a cat maybe? Tucked up against the wall by a leaky pipe. What the hell is that? I mutter, heart beating as Maya steps up to my side. I tap on my flashlight to my phone and raise it up to get a better look, and the light reveals a quieted, pulsating, death-looking moss. A fungus, I guess, or a cluster of fungus. Gray-green with specks of black. I watch as it trembles for a second or two longer, then falls back into hesitant, waiting stillness. I squint and lean a little closer. Not too close, mind. I dread to think of the spores such a monstrosity might produce. I realize further that there are tiny, twitching little worms that seem to be burrowing their way between the various bulbs and bulges of the cluster, although I am not sure if they are worms at all, or just minute, quietly squirming little tendrils. I don't consider myself particularly squeamish, but I have to suppress a sudden gag, and I take a step back. Indy, Maya murmurs, and I turn to her. She stepped a few feet away, and is facing the opposite direction. Did you see that thing? I asked her. I have never seen anything like it. There's probably more around here, too. But Maya isn't even looking this way anymore. She stood beside what looks like an old power box, staring down at the ground beneath a flickering light. What? I ask her, walking over. But she puts out an arm to stop me from going too far. I'm glad she did. Looking down at the ground past her feet makes my stomach drop. Beside the power box, the floor just gives way. It isn't immediately obvious due to the overlapping, flickering pattern of shadows, but the floor cracks away into an enormous hole, an entire missing section of flooring, and rusted old iron girders and broken grids are visible below. Down it goes, down past more dripping pipes and dead, hanging cables, down into the void. I become aware of a subtle rumbling coming from up the gap in the floor, coming up from beneath. From the far down darkness, I catch a glimpse of another cluster of fungus too, attached to an arc around one of the pipes. I shiver and lift my head to face back down the corridor. James! I call out one quickly last time, before I can psych myself out.
James, we're heading back up. This isn't funny, and we'll see you back on the surface.
But as ever, there is no response. I grab Maya's hand and turn back the way we came, back to the elevator doors, and she doesn't fight me. The doors, though, they're so far away. I could barely even still see them through the shadows. Did we really come so far? I could have sworn we scarcely walked more than a few dozen feet down the hall. But no, they're a long way away. I increase my pace and Maya does likewise. I cast a quick look behind me at the fungus up and against the ceiling, and to my dismay, it looks like it had resumed its shivering in the shade. I start moving faster still, long strides as my breathing quickens. The faint blue-green lights of the elevator doors becomes visible, and we break into a run. Side by side, we tear down the hall. One of my shoes lands squarely on a piece of strewn, overmarked paper, and it's sent up into the air as I race towards the doors. I can't even tell you why I'm running, in truth. I just feel it in my gut. That something is terribly wrong and we need to get out. We need to get out. The doors approach, closer and closer, and we stumble to a chaotic halt as my finger is slapped up against the button again and then again. We hear the thing whirling into motion behind the doors, and I cast a fearful look back over behind my shoulder and down into the hungry darkness of the hall.
Come on, come on, I mutter,
until at last the doors grind steadily open and we jump right inside.
Back to the surface? Maya asks.
Yeah, let's get back to the top and just think about what to do, I reply, thumbing the button for zero, and the doors draw dustfully closed. For a moment, there was silence, then it begins its ascent. Up through the underground layers I watch, blood pumping as the LED display finally changes from -2 to -1. But here, the elevator quickly decelerates.
What's happening?
Maya hisses, and then, with a hiss of its own, the elevator comes to a stop and the doors draw open, unbidden at level -1. As the doors part, we find ourselves staring back at ourselves. There is only a wall behind the elevator doors here, a giant glass mirror. And there we were, staring into our own faces. The mirror before us reflects the mirror behind us as it creates the illusion of a dark and never-ending tunnel leading away into both directions. A dark tunnel with Maya and I at the center. We stand in terrified silence, and the lights cut out. There is only the sound of our ragged breathing for a long, long moment, and when the lights flicker back to life, there is someone else in the mirror, someone standing just behind us. A young woman, staring back at us from the glass with lidless eyes. Her skin is deathly white, translucent even, and is peeled away completely from around her wide and bloodshot eyes.
Please,
she whispers, and Maya screams in alarm. She screams and panics and attacks the buttons on the side of the elevator in a frenzy. But I cannot move. I never would have thought I would have reacted like this. But here I am, stock still and frozen in place, unable to tear my gaze from the gaze of the woman in the mirror. She disappears from view as the elevator doors hiss closed, and motion resumes as we find ourselves once again going down. Down, down, down. Back down to the depths of the complex below.
The elevator descends down through the complex. The motion is quick, but the LED's transition from -1 to -2 is slow. I finally gather enough inner strength to move and turn to look at the spot behind me. where the spectral woman had appeared, but she isn't there now. There's only Maya and myself. I become aware that Maya is still screaming. I shoot my eyes back up to the LED. We're still descending. Negative 2 flickers away, and it's gradually replaced by a negative 3. The elevator decelerates, and finally, it stops entirely. There is a soft ding and a hiss, and the doors part. Jesus, comes a voice from the gloom, and Maya is startled out of her panic. She looks like she's going to pass out. The voice is James. James? I manage breathlessly, stepping out from the elevator on shaking legs towards him, equal parts relief and frustration. You idiot! What the hell are you playing at? Oh, hey, wait! He says suddenly, jumping past me and putting his hand on the elevator door, preventing it from closing. The door jams and clank, and he breathes a sign of his own relief. Sorry, guys, he says apologetically. I came down here to try and scare you, but the buttons don't work on this floor, so the doors closed shut behind me and I couldn't get them to open again. He chuckles. I was freaking out for a while, not gonna lie. You girls took your damn time. I smacked him on the arm. Ow! He says. Hey! Stupid a-hole. Never do anything like that again. All right, jeez. He looks over to Maya. Maya, you okay? Maya only stares ahead, shaking. She does, however, pull the boy into a hug, which surprises him. Okay, he says. Let's just get out of here, shall we? I don't think we can, I replied. The elevator door tries to clang closed again, but James' hand keeps them in place. You don't think we can? No, I replied. James, there's something messed up going on down here. I don't know what exactly, but I think we might need to look for another way out. Maya and I tried getting back to the surface and, well... I explained the ghostly woman. The woman with the skin and flesh peeled away from her eyes. The woman who only appeared in the mirror on level negative 1, and how the elevator wouldn't take us up any higher. James laughs nervously. What the F? He looked back at Maya, and he sees that the truth is in her face. She was right there, Maya said quietly. Right there behind us. So she was what? You're telling me that you saw a ghost? I don't know what we saw. I think she was only in the mirror. A trick, maybe. An illusion, or something clever, like a hologram, I guess. But she looked real enough. We both saw her. And the elevator didn't go back to the surface. I held out the palm and looked down at my hand as James considered this. My fingers are still trembling. Maya is convinced the girl was a genuine ghost, a spirit of some kind, and she starts babbling to James as I turn to take a look at our new surroundings properly for the first time. When floor negative 2 was a wide and abandoned hall, a warehouse of sorts, this level is far higher tech. The lights seem more reliable down here, though there aren't as many of them. They glow and hum softly in faint shades of teal and turquoise, and cast the desk and pans of authentic wall-like glass all around us in an eerie, watery light. There are computers down here too, desk chairs, some tipped onto their sides, cabinets, and further down the corridor is what looks like some kind of water feature, though the water no longer runs. Many of the desks still boast substal, blinking lights in orange and yellow. Okay, James says after a minute of thought. Okay, if you're saying that we can't get back up via the elevator, then we'll just have to find another way out, right? Right, I reply. And he gestures for me to hold the door to the elevators. I do so as he walks over to a nearby desk,
grabbing two of the chairs and dragging them over, wedging them into the elevator to prevent the doors from closing. "Is that going to be enough?" I ask, and after a moment of hesitation, he decides to drag over an entire desk too, grunting with exertion.
"Just in case,"
he says as he catches his breath, but satisfied that the doors are now not going to shut on us, we set out as a trio into the shadows. "So," I say, "did you do any exploring down here while you were stuck?" "Yeah," James replies. "Didn't find any stairs or anything, but there's a load of corridors this way. It all seems interconnected. Like, there's no doors or anything, just walls and glass and cables and shit." "Do any of the computers work?" "I couldn't get any of the screens to load." "Oh, but hey, check this out." He takes a slight detour and pushes past some strewn around office chairs and points at one of the computers. Not the monitor, but the actual boxy computer itself.
"Check it."
I look and then recoil. It's that same fungus again. There it is, tipped over, presumably split coffee mug on top of the computer. And it has now bound to the machine with a series of throbbing, green-gray, oozing, massive and thin, crawling tendrils. The grids and panel of the computer are bulged, warped and cracked wherever the fungus had clearly expanded from inside. Black ooze leads down the side of the fans and over the desk. I think it's black, at least. It's hard to tell the color in this light. "That's revolting," Maya murmurs. "It's the same fungus upstairs," I say to both of them. "That stuff is dangerous. Look, see how it reacts to the sound? To our voices? It's moving." It's certainly pulsating now, at least. Throbbing more violently. "Come on, we shouldn't be so close to it."
"It's not gonna hurt us," James remarks. But after a moment of hesitation, he does as I say, and we continue on along our way.
"It might, James," says Maya. "You know, spores and stuff." To this, James says nothing. We walk for quite a long time. 20 minutes or so, passing nearly identical rooms with occasional control panels. We see dead screens and quiet blinking computers. Glass containers, some intact, some cracked and smashed. Some of these containers contain samples of the fungus. We discuss what we have seen as we make our way through the darkness. Primarily, the ghost in the mirror.
"So if she was real, if," I say, "then what was she? What do we think?"
"She's a ghost," Maya says with certainty. "She was more than a projection. I could feel her. I could feel her presence in the elevator. She was cold and sick."
"You guys swear you're not just messing with me, right? For reals?" James asked again, but he is only asked with a grim silence, and he does not ask for a third time.
"What the hell happened down here?" I wonder aloud. "This place is just so deserted. Like everyone tried to leave in a hurry. And what's the deal with this layout?"
"No doors," says Maya. "No signs.
No damned emergency exit signs. And no stairs." James grunts, kicking over a chair in frustration.
"James, chill."
But I forget. James was down here far longer than we were. He's already spent an hour or more of his night looking for an exit before we showed up.
"Where's the way out?" he barks, then louder.
"Hello? Anybody there?"
"James," Maya hisses, pushing him. "Be quiet."
"Why?" he responds, and Maya does not have an answer for him. She just shrugs and looks away. I get why she says it, though.
The loudness of his voice makes me cringe in a place as quiet and slumbering as this, but I can't put into words why that is exactly.
Hello?
James shouts again, throwing out his arms, but there is no response. His voice echoes away into the turquoise gloom, and he rubs a hand across his forehead. With the sign, he slumps down into the nearest seat and stares off into space.
I'm sorry, guys, he says quietly. This was a mistake. I shouldn't have come down here.
It's all right, Maya murmurs.
Come on, I say. Let's just get this done. Let's try one of these corridors.
But we've been walking in basically a straight line. If we go off course, how are we going to find our way back? Asks Maya.
Look, let's just make something we recognized. Here, help me stack these chairs together.
We push a small group of chairs into a pile, a shape like we'll be able to see and find, and try heading off down a new route. At first, there are only more endless open space halls full of desks, computers, and occasional glass boxes, but the boxes become more numerous as we head through, until past a section of standalone plexiglass frosted wall, we find ourselves surrounded by them. Many of these boxes are filled with water and lit from beneath, and the colors of these lights are washed against the nearby walls. James looks around, and his face is cast in watery blue and deep green. Maya shivers, despite the fact that it's warmer in here than the complex as a whole, and her eyes reflect the dim purple glow from a nearby tank. The warmth, I think aloud. The lights, the elevator. There's something still powering all this stuff. Some backup generators or something. I look up overhead to see a red bulb blinking clear and fast. It sends out brief, regular flashes across the pipes and metalwork above our heads. An LED image of a basic stick man running through a door is also illuminated.
That kinda looks like an exit sign. Is there a way out around here?
We split up a bit. Not too much, don't worry. Still within shouting distance. And we explored around these curious glass tanks. Most are empty of everything but water, but on some, the glass had become clouded and blocked by gunk and dark murk. I creep between two particularly long tanks and peer through an open doorway, leading into a long hall beyond. The ceiling is high in there, and there are platforms attached to the wall, vantage points for walking across and looking down to the hall floor below. The room is filled with watery tanks, and these ones are large, far larger than the fish tank-sized boxes in the previous corridors.
Guys! I call out, just above my regular speaking volume. Guys, come and check this out!
I hear their footsteps approach and they join me in the hallway. All together, we head into the hall looking all around. Most of the tanks are illuminated in either red or blue, though a couple towards the far end appear to be glowing a soft purple. Our footsteps echo around the halls as we walk, and I look up into the nearest blue tank.
It's that fungus, I mutter to the guys. You see? It's in the water.
I struggle with a rise of revulsion as I see the fungus quiver in the liquid, attached to the corner of the tank at about half height and the size of a basketball. Its tendrils drift lazily in the water, and a bubble escaped from its side. I watch with disgust as the bubble rises up to the surface and disappears.
There's some in this one too,
says Maya as I turn to look. She's over by the tank's blue light, and beyond her in the water is another example of the fungus. This one is longer and larger, and covers almost the entire wall with its growth. James is a little further ahead. He stands in the red glow with the tank before him, and stares up into its waters.
James, you good? I ask.
but he does not reply. He does not turn, and a chill ripples up and across my back. My mouth goes death dry, and I ask again. James? No response. Cautiously, I walk over to him, though my movements have become sluggish and slow. I turn my head to look in the tank. In the center, softly bubbling, is a bloated mass that throbs and twitches. Long, thick tendrils connect it to the walls of the tank. And in the very center is an eye. My stomach drops with horror, and in the exact same second, a noise reverberates from the corner of the hall. A thudding, and the patter of general movement. I swing my head around and catch a glimpse of the red and purple washed shadow, slithering around in the darkness. And for a second, my voice catches in my throat. I am only able to grab onto Maya's sleeve, but as soon as I've drawn in a breath, I say it. Run! I didn't need the shout. The message is clear. I start to drag Maya back through the complex as James' legs return to life. And together, we make our escape. The energy suddenly frantic as we sprint and stagger back through the hall and into the preceding corridors.
Screw this! Screw this!
James shouts as we push past desks and blinking lights, knocking into the tower of chairs that was created and sending it tumbling with a clatter.
I can't take this anymore! I'm going up the elevator!
But James, the girl!
Screw that! I'd rather take on some ghosts than whatever the hell is down here!
And he runs down the long corridor back to the elevator, and I sprint after him before I lose him behind the panels and walls.
James, wait!
But he doesn't. He runs and runs until at last all three of us are stumbling and panting, exhausted at the doors, but still he doesn't stop. He tears away the chairs and with a grunt he draws back the desk, freeing the door space and allowing the elevator to close. He steps inside, chest still rising and falling and face flushed. His eyes dart over our shoulders.
Well, let's go.
Maya looks like she's about to cry.
I can't leave you down here, so get in, come on,
he urges, and reluctantly she does so, shaking. I grit my teeth and feel myself get dragged in. I turn to look out from the doors and into the gloom as they steadily draw close with a soft hiss and a gentle ding. And my stomach lurches as the elevator begins to rise. Maya stands, shaking in the corner, staring straight ahead. James swallows anxiously, still catching his breath.
Maybe it won't happen this time. Maybe we'll be okay.
The LED goes from -3 to -2. Up we go, ascending through the darkness. And my fear rises with it. I read the little line of text at the bottom compartment over and over, trying to keep myself calm. Do not open. Engage prior to adequate shutdown. Risk of fire. Max weight 2,000 pounds. Do not open. Engage prior to adequate shutdown. Risk of fire. Max weight 2,000 pounds.
It'll be okay, I mutter out loud. It's gonna be all right.
The LED rolls from -2 to -1, and it starts to slow. James looks down at the bottom to the left. Maya starts to panic.
No! No, no, hell!
The elevator comes to a stop at -1. My blood chills, and everything seems to suddenly drift in slow motion. The door clangs steadily open. And we see ourselves in the mirror. The color drains from James' face, and indeed from mine. There, standing between us, are two apparitions. The young woman from before, and a man, a little older. They both stare back at us in the glass. They shimmer, as if not entirely there, and the skin had flaked and peeled away from their eyes, giving them terrifying, lidless expressions.
"Please, no more,"
the man whispers. And quick as a flash, James slams the button for the elevator up. He shouts, "Back to the surface, damn it!" The doors close and we plunge back in the darkness. But the elevator does not go up. It refuses. So down we go. Down, down, down. Back down and into the depths. The elevator shudders through the darkness on its descent, waves of narrow light washing over us as we drop through the earth, until at last it comes to a stop at level -4. The doors hiss, and dutifully slide open, and we tumble out as the three and into the darkness.
"Holy hell,"
James mutters, putting a hand on his head, then throwing it out into the dark.
"Shoot!"
"Yeah,"
I replied quietly, as Maya tried the scuffle sobs just behind us. She swipes a sleeve across her eyes. Then we don't say anything for a while. We just proceed and look around. We appear to be in some sort of lobby. A transitional place, I guess. Not much feature to it. There's the water cooler and some chairs, and there's a vending machine in here, too. I'm not sure what's left in it, though. Upon closer inspection, I realize that the door has been cracked off its hinges. It looks like it could swing right open. A corridor leads away just ahead and around a corner. It's warmer down here. More humid.
"So you guys weren't just screwing around about the ghost," James said eventually.
"No," I replied.
"Of course we weren't. So we really are gonna have to find another way out then. We have no choice."
"Come on," I say to him, to both of them. "Are you ready? We should keep going."
"Right,"
he replies. He reaches over and squeezes Maya's hand, a gesture that she seems to appreciate.
"Let's keep going."
We head through the little room and round the corner. I don't know what I was expecting to find down there on level -4, but it wasn't what I'm seeing now. The corridor opens up into a wide hall. To the right is a collection of office spaces, empty meeting rooms and whiteboards with glass walls. Not so many computers down here. The screens are fewer, and built into walls well clear of the floor. The floor itself is tiled, all of it. Ahead, and to the left of the office space, is an enormous pool, and as with the level above, is lit eerily in green. There are machines fixed in the pool's edges. I'm not sure what they are, though, but one looks like it could be a wave generator. I walked over to the water's edge, to the gentle lapping against the side, not entirely still. The pool goes pretty deep down. It's difficult to say due to the warped perspective and gungry color of the water, but the pool walls round out into a cylinder and drop way down into darkness. There are offshooting tunnels built in the pool's side, and I could see other such pool further into the complex, and half dozen round of series of spiraling metal stairs. These stairs climb to a collection of interconnected viewing platform above all our heads. This is the first part of the whole place I've seen so far with actual doors. There are lots here, in the walls, leading away to unknown rooms and through curious passages.
"What is this place, guys?"
James asks, shaking his head as a vent hissing somewhere away in the shadow.
"What the hell is all this stuff?"
"We shouldn't be down here," Maya says. "That's all I know for sure."
"Some old research laboratory? But it's so massive. You'd have thought we would have heard of it, or someone would have known about it or something."
I paused for thought. "Abandoned,"
James says. Something happened here, and they all got the hell out, presumably. Pretty damn quick, too. Didn't even have time to shut off the lights or finish their coffees. Attacked by ghosts? I repeat, adjusting my sweater in the humidity, then decided to take it off and wrap it around my waist. No, that doesn't sound right. They didn't attack us anyways, Maya says. They're only in the elevator, nowhere else. James rubs his hands over his face. Let's just keep going. We need out. So keep going we do. We walk around the edge of the pool as the green light shimmers on its surface. Our eyes readjust to the gloom. Oh my God, I mutter, looking up into the corners of the room. Looking at the edges of the pipes at what I originally took for shadows. Guys, this place is filled with that fungus. Look, it's everywhere. And it really seems to be. Thick clusters of dark fungus spread and stretched out in the dampest, most humid crevices of the complex. It's probably just my imagination, but the air down here seems to become a great deal thicker. Cover your mouths, I say to them. Just in case, spores, you know? Maya has a mask in her back pocket, and she puts it on. James and I have to make do with drawing the front of our shirts over our noses and mouths. And so we walk, us three wanderers, through the wet and gloom of this underground nightmare, a trio in the watery darkness. We should climb up to the platforms over there, I say after a while, gesturing to the stairs. Might give us a better view of where to go. Sure, James replied, and we climb up on it, our footsteps echoing with metallic clanks as we ascend. It doesn't go up particularly high, maybe 10 or so feet off the ground, but it does give us a better vantage. We cross from one platform to another via a narrow metallic bridge built between them. But after a moment or two, Maya comes to a sudden stop, and James bumps right into her. Maya, jeez! I turn to look back at them, and see Maya staring intently down into the water of the pool directly below us. Guys? She whispers. Guys, look. We do so, and I see immediately what she must have spotted. We aren't alone down there, as there's something in the water. My heart pounds as I peer down, trying to make sense of what it is that I'm seeing. The shape in the water is human, at least, it looks human. The thing is slithering through the water, and while its shape might be humanoid, its movements and motions are very much not. They're more snake-like or fish-like. And the more I watch, the more I notice that the things that are wrong, very, very wrong indeed. The man, as it is a man, slithers and swims like a great fish. His legs, I see, have been, I don't know how to describe it, melted together almost. His limbs and joints are stuck and bound, wrapped by what appears to be a combination of melted flesh and that terrible dark fungus. Jizo. A long, low fin the color of the fungus has pushed up and out of its spine. I cannot see his face as he swims with his head down, but there is gill-like appendages withered and slowly pulsating at the sides of his neck, a neck stuck to his torso with dark, shivering strands. The abomination in the water approaches a corner of the pool and slithers around in a quick, sickening motion to change its direction. How does he know where to go? James whispers. He can't see where he's going. But he can, I realize. He can. From the top of his head, out from the scalp and peering through his hair, are two faintly glowing eyes. Pale yellow in the darkness, eyes where God knows they really, really shouldn't be. That thing in the water. It might once have been a human man, but it isn't anymore. His biology, the very structure of his being, has been warped into a monster beyond recognition. A creature slithering about in the depths. We watch in quiet terror as this thing slithers through the water, dropping down into the darkness until it is quickly lost from sight. The surface of the pool ripples softly, and the filters whirl dutifully on. We wait for a while in strained silence, waiting to see if the creature will resurface. Once we are sure as we can be that it hasn't re-emerged anywhere, we carry on, now painfully conscious of the sounds of our shoes against the thin metal of the stairs and the now narrow platforms. "What the hell was that?" James murmurs under his breath. "That was a dude, right? What the hell happened to him? What is going on down here?"
"You see that stuff he was all gunked up with?" I reply. "It was that fungus, James. I'm sure of it. We need to get out. We really need to get the hell out of here already."
"How did it do that to him?" Maya murmurs. "How could it?" I don't know. None of us do. But that grotesque image of the fungus bulging from within the computer on floor negative 2 returns to the forefront of my mind, and I shiver in revulsion. The platforms come to an end. Well, not quite an end as much, but they just keep going around and around the upper levels of these interlinked subterranean pool halls. We'll need to go down now if we want to make any progress. So down we go, moving carefully from step to step, and I could feel the group cringe as a whole when James accidentally slams his foot down hard onto the metal. Reverberations are sent throughout the railings. "It's fine," I find myself muttering. "It's all fine. Just keep moving." We reach the base of the stairs. The water from the pool here has leaked across the tiles, and our shoes make little splashes as we cross. I look back over my shoulder again and again and again, watching the surface of the water, looking for signs that the creature within it is going to wither up from the depths, but it doesn't. Not yet, at least. We pass through an arc, illuminated in flickering blue, through another and another. One last pool, only a few meters wide in circumference, bubbles softly to the left. It's ringed with rail. The machine attached to the water still works, but I have no idea what its purpose could possibly have been. We reach a door with a translucent window pane and pushed it open, revealing a lobby of sorts just behind it. There's a battered old humidity-damaged couch, and a plant that has exposed beyond the confines of its pot. The thing had climbed up beside the wall and has grown into the ceiling tiles and lights. Maya hurriedly closed the doors behind us and releases what I presume to be the long-held breath.
"So, it's the fungus,"
Maya says, stumbling over her own words a little.
You were right, Indy. You guys saw it, right? The fungus bulging through that guy's skin?"
She pales as she says this.
"There must be a way around here,"
James says as he looks around, distracting himself from what he saw, perhaps. "A back room set of stairs, or a freight elevator, or hell, just something. Something other than that frickin' elevator in the middle of the forest." There is an adjacent room here, connected to the lobby. Lots of rooms, actually, all leading into and through each other. The one right beside us had a thick glass screen that looked out into the damp and dingy pool hall, and the walls are covered in dead screens and random sketches. There's a large framed group photograph in here too, though humid has curled and wrinkled its edges. The sketches are of the fungus. I hear rustling, and look over to see Maya flicking through a load that has been taped together. Drawings, diagrams, sketches of vivisections and fungal roots. There are other drawings too. Drawings and photographs,
tacked or taped alongside disturbing pictures of human faces. Human faces infected and diseased, with rotting skin around the eyes, peeling back and away from the skulls. There are pages upon pages of notes titled Treatment Hypothesis, an experimental log, and other such things. My own eyes jump from picture to picture. There are sketches of animals here. Most are of fish, but others are lizards as well, bats and rats. And then there's the framed photograph. The large one hung in the center on a wall. It depicts around 36 people in lab coats and other similar gear, stood on a podium in a large, well-lit hall. The frame hangs beneath a plaque marked The Final Line of Defense, and in one of the middle rows I see a familiar face. And amongst all the others, it's her, and the face of the ghostly young woman I saw in the mirror. She looks normal here. She's smiling. She doesn't look scary. She looks nice. There is nothing wrong with her face or with her eyes. Maya, I murmur, beckoning over my friend. That's her, isn't it? That's the woman from the elevator mirror. Maya joins alongside and looks closely. Yeah, she says. Yeah, that's her. And hey, James chimes in, pointing to the face of the man a row behind. That's the guy, right? The ghost man that we all saw together. It is him, isn't it? And sure enough, I think James was right. That really looks like it could be him. A healthier, happier him. So what does it mean? I asked them. Should we even try to find out? Will it help us get to the surface? James puts his hand on his head. For fudge's sake. So they want us down here, is that it? The ghosts and these people? They want to keep us down here to die, to join them? What the hell happened to them? The final line of defense. I read out loud from the plaque, mulling the words over in my head. Something thumps and reverberates through the ceiling. The light flickers. I shoot a glance through the glass back towards the dark pool hall. I can see it again. The fish creature. A slithering shadow near the surface of the water. Those two faintly glowing eyes, pale in the gloom. Ripples shimmer out and across the pool as the monster swims. Without another word, James set off through the rooms. Maya and I follow with one last look back. On we go, past whiteboards covered in scrawlings, doodles of creatures. There are labels and notes and warnings. Reacts to sound. Begins with the eyes. Copies and pastes each qualities, modifying and adapting to suit the structure of its former host. Thorough remodeling, if left unchecked. They have sealed us away. We cannot get out. My heart hammers. With every room, the level of light seems to drop. The occasional green glow from the blinking, long-broken appliance is all that illuminates our way as we try to head further and further away from the pool hall. It doesn't feel like we're heading further away. The humidity and the warmth of the moisture in the air, it seems only to be increasing. Indy, Maya says from beside me, I don't like this. I don't think this is the way. James, I call ahead. James, this isn't helping. James has his face pressed against a window of dark glass. It's just the same, he mutters. More pools. This one's frickin' larger. I can't take much more of this. A layer of sweat glistens green in the light across his forehead, and he wipes it away. There's another thud from the ceiling, then the sound of a gentle scraping and the scratching in the darkness. It's okay, I say out loud as the fear within the group rises. We're okay. We've been conserving the batteries on our phones, but James taps his on now. The light hits the floor and illuminates a series of sketches.
like the others. One tacked to the wall, but has fallen and curled. Some are of people. Some are of fish. And one picture depicts another creature. An annotated spider. And as the scraping sounds are matched by the subtle wet hiss, James lifts his flashlight up to the ceiling. The light lands on a warped monstrosity, creeping its way towards us in the darkness. Terror strikes. The creature is a mutated combination of two human corpses, glued and merged and bound together by that vicious and terrible fungus. Cracked and twisted bodies into the shape of one enormous spider. The spider's eight limbs are the warped arms and legs of the two people, a man and a woman. And the woman, I don't fail to realize, is the young woman from the elevator. It's her, from the picture, the first ghost. The spider has two fangs, and each one descends from the mouth of one of the corpses. Saliva drips to the floor, and pale yellow eyes glow all across the heads and necks of its host bodies. Chaos takes hold, and with a scream, I watch as Maya hauls the top drawer from the nearest metal filing cabinet. The motion disturbs the spider, and with a sickening and skin-crawling speed, it scuffles across the ceiling to the opposite side of the room, being sure to keep us in its line of sight. Maya flings the drawer with all her strength at the glass, and it strikes with a thud and causes an impact crack right in its center. There are two more drawers. James grabs the middle one and sends papers spilling out over the floor. As the spider dares to creep down the wall towards us, James hurls the drawer right at its head. It hits with a wet squash, and with the hiss, the spider retreats. The final drawer I grab myself, using it like a club in the spot that Maya damaged the glass until it smashes through entirely. We stumble through the gap James cuts himself a little on his leg as he does so, and we scramble back out into the main pool hall, a different section to the one we were in earlier. "Over there!" James shouts, and we see a wide doorway in the side of one of the walls, tucked away in a corner. We head towards it, and I shoot a look back over my shoulder. One of the spider legs emerges cautiously from behind the smashed glass. I catch a glimpse of the cold, dead human fingers, bound together with fungus, and they grip carefully to the edge of the shattered glass. I turn away, back to look the way I am going. "James, why this way?" I called ahead. "This doorway is so much wider than the others. They must have needed a way to get all this big stuff down here," he replies, though I can't tell if he's talking to me or to himself, as he takes us down a gloomy fungus-lined corridor. Ignoring the smaller doors and tight corners, opting instead for the wider and open doorless arches. "James!" "Shirley," he mutters, red in the face from the exhaustion and the humidity. He leads us into the widest corridor so far. No tiles back here, just cold and emotionless concrete. There is a number of wooden boxes around, some small and some large. "Please," he murmurs, "please, please." And still we run, down the length of this corridor and into the darkness, following the gentle glow of a tiny blinking green light. "Aha!" he shouts, the glee in his voice bursting through the fear. "Yes, I was right, I..." He catches his breath as he skids to a halt. I always get there in the end. We have come to a stumbling stop beside the thing that we have been looking for, or one of the things, at least. Hope flares up inside me. It's an elevator. A second elevator. The doors to this one are much larger and wider than the previous, and James hastily presses the button as we look it over. A whirling and a rumbling sounds come up from beneath us. There is no LED above the elevator here to indicate what floor it's on, so we just have to wait anxiously until the hiss that the doors grind their way open. The space in here is much larger than the one in our elevator, and there's no mirrors along the walls either. We rush in and examine the buttons.
"Wait," I say. "This doesn't go up. It only goes down."
And sure enough, it looks like we have two options. A button for -4, the floor we're currently on, and a button that says -X. I look at the others.
-X it is then, I guess,
I say quietly, and they nod grimly in response, elation already fast dissipating. I press the button, and the doors slide slowly shut. One more level to go. Down, down, down. But this is good, right? This is progress. We have confirmed the existence of other elevators. There will be a way out. There has to be. Our stomachs drop as the elevator accelerates down. We are silent as it descends. And when it lasts open, we are met with another large corridor, dark, and with the level above, humid. Black mold creeps across the walls. The fungus is rife. I lift my shirt back up over my nose and mouth, and we head out into the misery of the complex. Directly opposite of us, in a similar-sized door to the elevator, massive and shuttered off with metal, James checks all over this, looking for buttons or ways to get it open, clues or keypads, but he finds nothing. Maya and I walk the length of the corridor. It narrows out pretty quickly. In one direction, the passage quickly becomes lost to a jungle of fungus and makes my skin crawl just looking down at it. The other way is far clearer, so our route really is a no-brainer. Once James had frustratedly given up now for his assault on the metal barrier, we walk down this new corridor. It is lined with pipes and various valves, and is barely wide enough for the two of us to walk down side by side. It snakes this way and that, sometimes stretching forwards in a completely straight line. But there are no doors, no off-shooting corridors or alternate routes. And at last, we are led right back to where we had started. There's a moment of painful tension. Then James swears in frustration and kicks the wall. Maya slumps down against it. After all that, we have been led right back to the very same elevator. Its level -X doors waiting for us, taunting us. Maya starts quietly sobbing. Dazed and defeated, I turn to the right. There's a doorway here, and it leads into a gloomy and red-lit hall, so I head on through. Why the hell not? What will I find?
There's no way out! James shouts in despair. There's no way out! Help us, anyone! How do we get out?
My feet clank on metal mesh platform, kind of like the platforms on the level above, though maybe a little thicker. I quickly reached a rail and put my hands on the bar, looking over the edge. Ahead and below is the void. Steam churns quietly all around us. Vents blast and puff out bursts of the stuff. And already I could feel myself sweating, worse than I did on the previous floor. To my left, the rail and the metal platform extends away into the darkness and the steam. To my right, it widens out a little. Styrofoam has been piled high in here, polystyrene and cardboard too, now rotted. A dumping ground for waste and junk. And amongst them, and steadily grinding and humming, are a series of generators. One has been dislodged from its location and leaned at an awkward angle. The rest remain fixed in place. These must be what continue the power of the facility. There are 9 of them down here by my count, and I walk past them one by one, kicking aside some styrofoam as I do. 2 of them appear to be dead, but the remaining 7, including the one tipped at an awkward angle, all continue to blink and judder. Ancient but powerful things keep it all running down here, I guess. still doing their job after the masters have long since departed. I take a look down over the rail again, down into the great yawning chasm of nothingness below. If I squint, I feel like I can almost make out further platforms, dark and barely visible in way below, covered in shifting, crawling, shadowed shapes. Unease takes a hold and I retreat from the rail, suddenly nauseous. Looking back to the doorway, I see that I have been joined by James and Maya, both illuminated red in the faint blinking lights of the generators. They aren't looking down, though. They're looking up. I do likewise. Above our heads, and attached to the metal grids of the ceiling, is an enormous throbbing fungal mass. It is colossal, the largest of them all by far. Bulging, tentacle-like veins connect the mass to the metal overhead and spread out wide like an intricate nervous system. Slime oozes down its sides. The mass is covered with eyes. They stare in different directions, but stare they do. Some at James, some at Maya, and some at me. Unblinking, watching, watching in the darkness. I don't feel afraid, though, now. Perhaps I have exhausted my fear reserves. I think about the ghosts, about the young woman, the picture I saw of her smiling with her colleagues, her rotted corpse strung up and defiled into the fungal spider. I think of the ghost of the man, too. I wonder now if perhaps that was him in the water, the slithering fish. "Please," they had said. "Please." And I decide, like a strike of lightning on a course of action. I turn from the monstrous fungus, the centerpiece of desolation, the mother mass. I run back across the platforms through the steam and return to the elevator, tearing off a piece of pre-damaged piping from the wall as I do. "Hey, Andy, what are you doing?" James asks me, but I move past him into the corridor and press the button for the elevator. My heart beats fast, but I feel better now than I have at any other point on this terrible, nightmarish night. The elevator whirls, its doors stand silent and still, and then, with a soft ding, they open on up. I look for the panel by the buttons, the ones that say, "Do not open, engage prior to adequate shutdown, risk of fire, maximum weight 2,000 pounds, and I smash it as hard as I can with the pipe. With the first hit, the panel dents and little sparks fly from the cracks. "Indy!" Maya asks for me, but she doesn't try and stop me. I smack the pipe against the panel again, and it cracks and dents further. More sparks fly. "Maya, grab some of the trash," I shout over my shoulder. "The styrofoam!" She does so at once. She knows what I'm trying to do, but I'm not sure if James has caught on yet. I hit it over and over. I pull the exposed wires and smack it as hard as I can. I press the buttons on the elevator at the doors trying to repeatedly jutter closed, but I don't let them. I keep forcing them back open even as I strike. Maya returns, and I jam a load of the dryer cardboard and the styrofoam into the open paneling. "Burn!" I shout aloud, with perhaps just a hint of madness in the edge of my voice. And lo and behold, it does. Flames flicker out from the panel and I strike it again. The flames die down, then burst out again, redoubled in size. "What the hell are you doing?" James shouts with his hands on his head. "We're going to kill it, James," I tell him. "The fungus! We're gonna burn it out! This ends!" He stares at me as smoke starts to fill the compartment. "Dislodge the generator," I tell him, as I encourage the fire to grow, feeding it with trash as it burns brighter and brighter. "The one at the end, try to get it disconnected from the walls." James pauses. He looks like he's going to question this, but then he just nods and takes off. "Maya, keep it going. Burn it bigger and brighter, more and more," I tell her. And she does as I say.
I run back to the metal platforms of level negative X, and with the anger in my blood, I clamber up onto the lowest of the rails that mark the platform's edge, and I swing the pipe at the fungus again and again, attacking what I preserve to be its weak point, where it looks the softest. Sludge bursts from the mass's sides, and the eyes all swivel to stare right at me, staring into my soul as it vibrates fiercely in response. Shadows move in the dark, and the fire and the flames burn larger. I move forwards and backwards across the platform, grabbing up chunks of burning material and wedging them forcefully into the fungus's sides, right into the heart of the mother mass, into the weak spot I tore out with the pipe. The fungus twitches and pulsates violently with every burning strike. The first few flames were extinguished quickly in the mass's moisture and ooze. But Maya joins in with my efforts, and as the edges of the fungus begin to dry and crack in the heat, the flames start to take hold. Smoke billows out from the elevator and up towards the ceiling. I glance up. There's an enormous hole in the metal roofing not far away, and this is where the smoke seems to be climbing up, disappearing out of sight. I wonder idly if it might connect to the hole in the floor that Maya had found on level negative one, all those long, long hours ago. The fungus thrums and throbs with rage. Its multitudes of horrendous eyes crack and melt in the searing heat as the fire begins to overtake it, and still Maya and I fan the flames, burning trash as it hurled right at it, stuffing into its sides. I scorch my hands a few times, but it doesn't faze me. The pupils of the mass's eyes all narrow as one, staring out with rage at its assailants. But it is undefended here, down here, in the dark. And at last, with a burst of green-gray ooze, the burning fungus disconnects from the ceiling. It hangs and swings by three thick, sticky threads, those tiny little worm-like tendrils flailing madly. Then two of those threads snap through the fungus slams hard against the railing. The final eye stares up at me as it is engulfed in flames, and the final thread snaps too. Down goes the fungus. A burning fireball in the darkness. It illuminates in orange various pipes and platforms as it drops. We catch glimpses of terrible creatures lurking in the shadows, scampering away, fearful of the light. And at last, it crashes into a platform far below us, still sizzling, still smoking. But it isn't enough. We help James into the final stages of dislodging the generator. We tip the machine, its vital organ of the facility, down over the rails after it. It too falls fast into the abyss, though its lights is nowhere near as bright. Not until it strikes the smoldering fungus and the metal upon which was cast. The generator bursts into an intense explosion that sends a ripple of heat all the way up back towards us, one that causes us to step back and shield our eyes. And then, for a while, there is quiet. Just the sound of us three idiot teenagers catching our breath. The distant sizzling of the remains and ruins down below, and the flickering flames in the elevator behind us. I cough through the smoke, and start to kick and haul away the pieces of burning trash by the elevator's edges. I use the pipe to reach in and separate the materials, and then, sitting down on the metal mesh and close to the ground, we wait for the fires to burn themselves out. I'd say it takes about 15 minutes, but at last, the final flame dies out, leaving behind it a blackened and scorched and smoky elevator room, lined with ash and where wires sparked out from its panel. "Do you think it'll still work?" I ask Maya and James after a moment.
"Yeah," says James. "I'm sure it will. Bit of fire damage, it ain't nothing.
And even if it doesn't," Maya says, "we'll find another way. We'll for sure find another way out. We found another elevator. We could do the same thing again." She squeezes my hand.
"Okay," I reply, with an exhausted smile. "Shall we give it a try then?"
Yeah, James replies. Let's do this.
So we clamber our feet into the elevator. The smoke has dispersed now, but it still reeks of ash and rot and burnt plastic. With another cough, I glance to the others, and then carefully press the button to floor zero. There is silence for a second or two, an unsettling grinding noise, as if the elevator is struggling with its request. But then, as its purpose, it whirls and rumbles, and the doors draw closed with a soft, familiar ding. And up it goes. Up, ascending through the darkness. The LED flickers from negative X to negative 4. I shift from foot to foot, waiting, hoping. Up from negative 4 to negative 3. Higher still. From negative 2 to negative 1. What's going to happen? I think to myself. Will it take us back to the surface? Ascending. Up and up. And as it happens, it does not. Not yet, at least. The LED flickers over from negative 2 to negative 1, and here the elevator decelerates. James grips one of my hands and the other takes Maya's. The elevator slows to a stop, and as before, it slowly whirls open. The lights blink and drop, and we are plunged temporarily into darkness. And when they return, we see ourselves in the reflection, the mirror wall that the open doors of the elevator reveal to us. It reflects the mirror behind us, and creates the illusion of a tunnel leading away into infinity. And in this tunnel are almost 3 dozen people. Directly behind us are the young woman and the man. And behind them are others, dressed in lab coats and other such gear. It's the group from the framed photograph we found on level negative 4, the final line of defense. They shimmer and they smile. Their eyes have not rotted around the sockets. They are as they were, at their best. My heart beats fast, but I am not afraid. Thank you. Mouths of the ghostly young woman and I smile at her. The elevator doors to floor negative 1 whirl quietly closed of their own accord. And at last, it whirls on, ascending. Back up we go to level 0. Back to the forest. And when the doors finally open, we are rushed with a cool and glorious breath of fresh air. Forest air. It spills into the open compartment and we are illuminated in the light of the moon and stars. And our ghostly cohort streams steadily out through the doors. In human forms at first, but fading quickly into nothing more than silvery starlight, they disperse into the air around us. And then they vanish peacefully away. I don't quite know what to say. I don't think any of us do. So we simply head on out and back through the forest. The leaves crunch beneath our feet, and I hear the sound of a soft ding behind us as the elevator doors whirl closed.